Welcome to the Biochar podcast presented by Antbig. Our podcast features experts speaking about biochar, how it's made, its uses and applications, and the impact it has socially, economically, and environmentally. Antbig is a not-for-profit industry group, and as a global leader in biochar, assists companies, governments, and institutions in the effective production and use of biochar. Antbig works to streamline education, research, collaboration, and the commercial uptake of biochar and wood vinegar. Our aim is to help create a more sustainable future, greater economic prosperity, job opportunities, and an improved quality of life for all of us. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to season two of the Biochar podcast. I'm John Coyne, the current CEO of Antbig, and I'm joined by Sam Sagami, our cluster manager. On today's show, we have Philip Link, who's the Managing Director of Energy Link Services, along with his colleague, Mike Hallam. So welcome to the show, Phil and Mike.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, Don and Sam.
No problem. So, Phil, I'm just wondering if you could start off by telling our audience what is that Energy Link Services does, a bit about Puro Earth and your link to them.
Sure. Yep. So thanks again. This is for our round two conversation. Really excited to be here and very excited to be supporters of members of Antbig and also the exciting venture for 2022 being the roadmap, which we're also supporting and are going to be heavily involved into. Congratulations, Sam and Dom, for those efforts. And if you're listening, please, go in and help support us through the fundraiser campaign, which I'm sure the guys will put a link to in the show notes or on the post. So fantastic initiative and congratulations again. So as Don said, I'm the Managing Director of Energy Link Services. We're a carbon energy sustainability focused consulting firm. We are heavily involved in carbon markets from an advisory point of view, assisting corporations with their decarbonization strategies, carbon neutral strategies. People out there may be aware of the Australian government's Climate Active initiative, which is a mechanism to certify businesses, products, services as carbon neutral. So we're registered consultants under that Australian government certification scheme. And in fact, Climate Active is we would argue, one of the most rigorous, globally recognized and rigorous carbon neutral certifications. And the reason why I bring that up is because that becomes a strong demand source for carbon offsets, carbon credits. And one thing that the biochar sector and space is now really showing its worth is in the development of carbon offsets and carbon removals in particular. One thing that I think is really, really important to highlight is at the macro level, we have an issue. We have something that needs to be dealt with, and that's climate change and global warming. And, the latest science sort of talks about 1.5 degrees becoming increasingly out of reach. And that's where we really need to say the climatic warming really should not exceed 1.5 degrees because of the spur on effects that takes place. So the longer that we don't address this problem, the harder it will be to maintain to stay within that 1.5 degree band that's been spruiked by scientists. So we can sit here and Energy Link Services is very good at assisting businesses to avoid emissions, but fundamentally we need to start removing carbon from the atmosphere. That can be done in any way, shape, or form, but one of the most well researched, both from a scientific but from an engineering perspective, is biochar and how biochar is in effect nature's carbon capture and storage. It's demonstrated its permanence, and it's got a host of co-benefits that are discussed at length by yourself, Don and Sam, and other members, but fundamentally it's a huge opportunity to assist us in that removal equation or that removal component. So we are and have been working very closely with a voluntary carbon marketplace called Puro.earth, again, which has been extensively covered in previous podcasts and by Ansbig more broadly. And that provides a financial incentive for biochar producers to engage in the carbon market through the creation of removal certificates or removal offsets and be able to generate or monetize that carbon removal by selling those offsets. And that's creating a marketplace. We're seeing transactions largely take place in outside of Australia, but some of Ansbig's members have been beneficiaries of purchases of biochar derived carbon removals. And the key characteristics again is that removal component and that growing market that's emerging from particularly the US and the fact that Puro.earth's major investor is Nasdaq. So I'll probably leave it there and talk. We can talk a little bit more about verification. Yeah. But Mike, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think probably the one thing I would add is that we do provide verification under Puro.earth's method specifically for biochar. So we've completed quite a number of audits of both projects based in Australia, but also kind of across the US and Asia Pac. So there's been quite a number of projects, and we've been involved for probably two years now in helping them and providing assurance over the removal credits that are being created.
Why do you guys feel that, why is the role of verification important within this?
So the role of verification is really important, and it's a cornerstone of any carbon market, if you like, or carbon marketplace. I think it's important on both sides. It provides assurance to the project owner that the way that they're going about calculating the carbon removal or carbon offset, it has been done in accordance with the rules and enables them to comfortably continue producing. And on the flip side, it provides assurance to the buyers that what they're purchasing in terms of that, because every carbon credit, be it an avoidance unit or a removal unit, it is equal to 1 ton CO2 each, so 1 ton of CO2 equivalent. And that's how they're denominated, and so the buyer will want to make sure that they're purchasing that one ton E every instance, and that's why verification is so important, because it provides assurance both from the seller and the buyer, and is maintaining ensuring that there's that we're maintaining high integrity governance. Any number of things that relate to, auditing is commonplace in the financial industry. It's commonplace in carbon markets. It plays a very important role to uphold the principles of those marketplaces.
Yes, indeed. So Puro's methodology for carbon credits was first launched in 2019. And recently they have changed its methodology. So I'm wondering if you guys can speak to the old methodology and then discuss the key changes people need to be aware of.
Yeah, definitely. And the new method, when we talk about this, we are talking specifically on the biochar side. There may be other changes to other methods, but that's beyond this. So the old method really was a cradle-to-gate assessment of the production process for making biochar. And so it really looked at everything from where you got your feedstock, how it came to your facility, the operation of your facility, to the point that biochar then was sold to a customer or, left your facility. Anything that happened beyond that point was not part of the calculations. And so that was your project emissions that you're looking at. And from a carbon sequestration point or a carbon removal point, They look at using lab tests and looking at the organic carbon content or the fixed carbon within your biochar, and then subject to a couple of criteria around where the biomass came from, what the molar ratio of hydrogen to organic carbon and oxygen to organic carbon is, what sort of buffers need to be taken into account and effectively say, well, you've removed X tons of carbon dioxide equivalent, you've emitted, Y tons in allowing that process to take place, and the net removal is this. And so that method was in operation for about 2 years. A number of projects, including ANSBIG members, were completed under the old method. And then since then, there has been some further research and advancement in the science around biochar and the measurement of carbon removals. And so the method's been updated to reflect that. And there have also been some other criteria that have been introduced that align more with existing and more mature carbon standards around financial additionality and making sure that removals are not being credited where that removal may have taken place regardless of its participation in a carbon market. And also just some changes around the types of processes that are eligible and the feedstocks that you can use. So, historically under the old method, there was a prescribed list of eligible biomass feedstocks, and this was derived from the European Biochar Certification Scheme. And that's now been expanded and broadened to allow a more, a less prescriptive approach. So as long as your biochar has been sustainably sourced and you can demonstrate that and an auditor will review that, you are eligible to participate, subject to the other criteria being met. And we see that as quite important, as it does unlock some of the more non-traditional feedstocks and allow, innovation to take place without needing all of the other programs to be in sync and aligned and changes to take place there. So we see that as quite a fundamental development to really allow the next wave of feedstocks to be leveraged. One of the other key changes is around the actual process itself and what you need to do, particularly around your gases and your waste heats. So historically, there was a requirement for you to use the waste heat from your process. Up to 70% of your waste heat needed to be captured. And then also you needed to look at your gases and making sure that they were being used as well and captured or put to use in some way. So this really meant that the only types of plants that could participate were, large centralized plants that were usually connected to some form of industrial process, where the syngas that was coming off a pyrolysis reactor was being used to provide process heat, generate electricity, or some form of process like that. That requirement has changed to become more about making sure you're destroying any of the methane that's generated and any of the other types of gases that are generated during a pyrolysis process, so that you can undertake processes that are maybe mobile. So, where you may not be able to build a centralized plant or you have a distributed network of facilities, you can have mobile pyrolysis units. And we think this is quite important, as it does give flexibility to adapt pyrolysis reactors to the right types of circumstances and opens up a huge market segment where there isn't necessarily a need for process heat or electricity generation for that matter. But you can still create biochar, you can still derive all of the benefits that you would historically. You just now are eligible to participate because you're not bound by that need. I would still highly recommend and draw attention to the requirement to destroy your gases in an engineered fashion. It isn't like you can just emit methane into the air willy-nilly or anything like that. There is still quite a process to go through to make sure that takes place, but it does allow more sophisticated approaches. So we see that as quite important, and it feeds quite well into the financial additionality arrangement, because Puro and buyers more broadly in carbon markets want to make sure that any removals or carbon credits that they're buying are incentivizing new activities. Nobody wants to pay a price, and particularly the premiums that we've seen in removal credits, for something that's going to happen anyway. And so more stringent requirements have been added where you need to provide, for example, a business case or a detailed business model to show why carbon removals and the revenue streams associated with carbon removal credits are needed for your project to take place. And this might seem like a little bit of a kind of a hammer on people or a bit of a burden, but it is quite aligned with a number of other carbon standards. There is a general rule more broadly around additionality, and it's quite commonplace. So it does bring Puro in line with other standards, and it's not something that we view as being overly burdensome. It does really develop the integrity of the market and make sure that buyers are getting what they pay for, which is, you know, removals that wouldn't have otherwise taken place. And one of the last changes that I'll touch on relates to the actual calculation criteria, and it's the introduction of a permanence factor for biochar. So historically, it was assumed that a buffer was applied up to 2.5 or 5% based on the oxygen and hydrogen content within your biochar. That's now changed to be a bit more sophisticated, and it looks at what the molar ratio is between your hydrogen and organic carbon content, and then applies a formula to look at the degradation rate of that biochar moving forward, so that if you know your biochar is going to degrade somewhat, there's still quite a lot of sequestration that will take place, but you know, the full 100% may not be there in 100 years or beyond that period. And so there's now a formula that's in place to take that into account. And that looks at variables in like soil temperature. So what's the typical end use going to be, and where's that going to end up? Obviously, things tend to degrade more when it's hotter. So it is a little unfortunate for Australian projects, because the soil here is a lot warmer than in nice cold Finland. At the end of the day, it's what the science says, and it's important that the best and most up-to-date science is being followed. So while it may reduce the eligible removals for some projects versus the old method, it does mean that all of the removals that are being created are, you know, are genuine, accurate, and there's a really rigorous scientific process that sits behind them. And we see the new method enabling far greater participation across the biochar industry and across a number of kind of industries that sit adjacent around, you know, forestry, waste, agriculture. And so we see it, this method's really opened up opportunities for participation in carbon markets. And so, you know, we think that the net overall result is overwhelmingly positive from the method change.
And it allows to price permanence because we're seeing emergence. So, whilst a ton of CO2 in Australia is a ton of CO2 in Finland, using the same example, the co-benefits or the associated benefits with that carbon removal project are not all equal. And so we do see businesses looking at, and I think Stripe's a very good example, they do set, when they purchase carbon removals, they set permanences as their number one factor. So if you can tweak your system or process or project for that matter to derive a higher permanence factor, which the method now accounts for, you will derive a higher price for those units.
And so you're going to get more costs as well under that calculation method. So it does allow you to adjust your processes and be rewarded for doing so.
Really interesting changes there. And one of the things that it brings up for me is just the importance of the role that you guys have in going out to projects and, you know, seeing how a project can evolve or tweak those things to get a higher price and make sure that they are kind of ticking all the boxes when it comes to the methodology. I'm interested in knowing your point of view in, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, but the implications of these changes, not only for some of the members maybe that have already gone through the process, you know, what's it going to be like for them now? Are they going to have to revisit things? And just the implications in general.
Yeah, look, I might start, Mike, and then you can sort of come in. We're seeing an emergence of applications which are really, really exciting. I mean, Mike touched on the mobile units and the ability for the forestry industry to start producing clean, green biochar or organic biochar, if you like, which can be utilized either on site or sold commercially. And that's through forestry, you know, for example, forestry thinnings. I mean, one thing that we have seen is, well, traditionally, as we understand it, the forestry industry will really either allow let those thinnings essentially rot, if you like, stay on site and rot. I mean, that's important for the soil itself. But it's a disastrous outcome for the environment in terms of CO2, in terms of sort of climate change, rather, because you're emitting CO2 and biogenic methane. The other thing that they do is burn it, right? And again, not a good outcome. If you can create biochar from those things, you're removing that CO2 and methane that's not going into the atmosphere. Fantastic outcome for the environment. So that's one fantastic, I guess, use case. The other thing which Mike wasn't actually able to touch on yet in some of those methodology changes, but actually using carbon markets as a catalyst to improve biodiversity. And we're seeing the emergence of applications of the new methodology in use cases where, you know, you're able to remove invasive species if they're appropriately identified. You can remove those, char those, and either use again that char for the market more broad, sell commercially, or you know, spread it in the regions where you've, or in the area that you've removed the invasive species, and that's that to me, you know, warms my heart. If we're able to solve a problem which historically the governments had felt was too hard to solve, an invasive species invasion is everywhere. You know, our native forests are unfortunately impacted heavily by invasive species. If we can create an incentive through the use of or leverage carbon markets to create an incentive to drive biodiversity outcomes, that's a fantastic outcome for the world and for those project proponents. So, you know, we're seeing the emergence of those things. We're being thrown in and involved in those types of conversations. And the other thing I will say, and sort of more back to the core market characteristics of biochar itself, is we're still in a bit of a chicken and egg scenario. There's people out there crying out for biochar, and there's suppliers out there going, well, we can produce it, but we can't see a market. There's no depth at the moment. There aren't large-scale commercial transactions. If we can use carbon markets to increase the supply of biochar as a commodity into marketplace, we're going to see it applied far more broadly in Australia's agri sector and you know, in farming applications, which may mean there's less reliance on on very intensive carbon intensive fertilizers, improve water retention. Not that that's a issue at the moment on the east coast of Australia, but it will come back. You know, we're going to be in a drought at some point in time. Biochar can play a pivotal role in water retention in soils and help like the Australia's wine industry. I mean, perfect use case. They've got the use of char in that sector is bound to derive yield benefits, bound to derive water efficiency benefits. You know, the list goes on. So I'll probably leave it there.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So yeah, you're getting those productivity gains, you know, soil processes gains, and then of course the carbon markets are a bonus, aren't they? So, but why is it important to the market to continuously evolve, and why are these changes good for market longer term, do you think?
Mike, maybe
yeah,
you can.
Yeah. So you know. I mean, I think it's always good for markets to evolve because the science and the research behind things evolve. So we want to make sure that we are in keeping with the best science and making sure that any removal claims are robust and accurate. But also, you know, the markets learn. We know that there are certain things that historically weren't able to be done that represent genuine removals and should be encouraged. But there wasn't the ability to do that because we hadn't gone through the processes of learning. And from a verification perspective, you know, what are the things that we see as traditional gaps from project proponents? What are things that are done well? Where are areas that can be improved? So when that can be leveraged in method amendments to say, well, we know that this is a pinch point for a lot of projects. You know, there's not a need, there's no process heat requirement or something sitting on the other side for a method to evolve to be able to recognize that and open opportunities up without sacrificing integrity. That's a pivotal step because it just means there's greater market uptake, there's greater market depth, and the transactions that take place become larger, more frequent, and then the price stability and things like that and the sophistication of financial products offered off the back of those increases, and then you get much larger players becoming involved. You know, I mean, there's obviously the Microsofts, the Stripes and the Shopifys of the world who are currently involved, but, you know, broadening that to, as Phil said, you know, NASDAQ is a major shareholder. There's a very number of very, very large companies there. Broadening the reach of carbon markets is quite important. So, It's a natural evolution that takes place, and we think it's a very positive one.
Continuous improvement.
Yeah, exactly. In the same way, project proponents continuously improve their machines to extract better yield, more desirable characteristics. The market is always, and the standards are always evolving to make sure that, you know, removals are more accurate, that the types of project activities that can take place are within reason, as broad as they can be, to allow the market to deliver solutions that ultimately can produce the best quality outcomes for the best price.
Interesting. You touched on the NASDAQ there, and you know, this kind of moves us into our final question. When I saw that being released, that they had an index listing, I was like, "Ooh, they're pulling out the big guns now." I'm just wondering if you could, you know, tell us about the pre-Cork framework and the NASDAQ index listing.
Yeah, agree, Sam. It is a great advancement on behalf of or by the Puro.earth team, and really their one of their cornerstone investors being the NASDAQ itself. So starting with the pre-Cork framework, which was launched, I think, in October last year from memory, what that's really allowing project proponents to do is to enter into long-term offtakes for delivery of cork CO2 removal offsets or credits, and off the back of that obtain financing. So if they can present, if they've got a good technology, an offtaker for the long-term offtaker with the units, which is credit worthy, demonstrates a very healthy a balance sheet, if you like, they're able to then obtain, you know, a range of financing mechanisms to leverage that long-term offtake. That's simply how it works. And look, that's not a new or a novel concept. It works for a range of commodities globally, and is a very strong point of leverage for projects. The NASDAQ index is a very, very interesting development, and it's starting to show that the marketplace is moving, the Puro marketplace is moving from, its early stage and a growth stage, but sort of an early stage through to a point of maturity. And we're seeing the maturity both from the perspective of the amount of participants, the depth of trading that's taking place, and the sophistication of buyers as well, or the interest from the buyer's point of view. So the index, again, there are carbon indexes globally that are available, which provide an insight into how corks can and will be priced. I think that the point here is that whilst that index is now live on the NASDAQ, it still is really just a sort of a point of interest. We shouldn't be looking too much into where that price sits, because there are over-the-counter trades, if you like, that are taking place that may fall outside of that index range. But as the market continues to mature, more trades and depth in the market emerges, that index will become the telltale sign for what we can sort of a price you can hang your hat on. It's just at the moment it's in its infancy, and I don't want to downplay it, because you got to, like with anything, you got to start somewhere. And I think this is a really strong move from Puro to start to provide some visibility to investors. And in particular, if you think about it, you know, the types of companies that are listed on the NASDAQ, they're businesses which often have limited opportunity to get to absolute zero. So they'll always have an offsetting requirement. They also have very strong climate change agendas, where, going back to my initial point, carbon removals are necessary in order for us to get to that 1.5 degree level. They feel very strongly about that. You know, Microsoft, Spotify, Shopify, these types of corporations listed on the NASDAQ are really heavily skewed towards, doing as much as they can under the bonnet, through energy efficiency, green electricity supply, et cetera, et cetera. They know they need to do something about removing carbon from the atmosphere, and are really investing heavily in carbon removal projects such as biochar and any host of others.
Yes, fantastic.
And if I can, if I can just add something here on the pre-cork framework more than index, do you think it's been quite helpful for project proponents that are looking to scale? We've seen some pilot facilities that have effectively done a proof of concept and shown that their facility can participate and their machine design is eligible under the Puro scheme, and then look to leverage a long-term offtake to go and build that scaled up model. So we know that from a, sitting on the other side, from a commercial lending perspective, there's a risk in the technology and there's a risk in carbon pricing. If they're able to fix one of that risks or one of those risks and say, well, we know we've got a prototype that works, we know that we can participate in the market and we've got a fixed price for the units that we're going to create, it really does help kind of build a bankable business case to go and get that funding and help those project facilities and project proponents scale up their operations. And so we think it's a really, really positive development. And from a company's perspective, it's also quite good because they can manage their future liabilities and say, well, we think they may be very bullish on future pricing for corks. And they might say, oh, you know, we think it's going to go substantially up. Let's see what we can do to try and lock in some pricing now. So it allows kind of everyone to manage their risk. Project proponents can get a fixed price. And then also corporates sitting on the other side are able to lock in an offtake to say, you know, we know that we can remove this many emissions and we've managed our price risk for the next number of years. And so it plays well to both sides of the markets. The benefits aren't all skewed to producers or to buyers. It's quite well shared. Mm. So it's a very nice, well-rounded arrangement they've put in place.
Okay, great. All right. And so any sort of final comments about projects you're involved in or about Energy Link services at all?
Just a concluding comment. I think we're very bullish on the Pure of the Earth marketplace. We're very bullish on the emergence, I guess, or growth in sophistication of the biochar industry to be globally in Australia. I mean, Australia's got a huge opportunity in space given the biomass that we have available. And I think that, you know, for those people that are out there listening, if you've got a project idea concept in mind or have any questions about the new methodology, the verification process, or just want to have a yak, come and have a chat to us. Our door's always open, literally.
Yeah. So where can they find you online? At energylinkservices.com.au.
Yep, that's right. We're on LinkedIn as well, you know, LinkedIn. Philip with 1L Link, last name Link, and Michael Hallam, spelled out there. We've got a strong presence on that side of things, but, you know, not adverse to the old school phone, give me a buzz. Our details are on the website.
On the website, right. Fantastic. All right. Wonderful, guys. Well, yeah, this... I listened to an airminer's webinar by Bill Cross, who's a big entrepreneur in this carbon removal space. And he was estimating that the carbon removal marketplace will be worth $1 trillion worldwide by 2030. So, you know, and Swiss Re, their motto is do your best and remove the rest. The science-based targets, they're now in there as well, aren't they, saying that you must, the last little part of your offset must be removal. So, if that doesn't get us excited, nothing else is going to. It's very exciting, and we are extremely chuffed to have you on board as a member and also with our roadmap. And, you know, with all this very exciting innovative technology coming on, ANZBIG does aspire to be a super innovation cluster by 2030. So that is, you know, being a magnet for the entrepreneurs, the academics, the capital, governments and corporations. So, you know, that's what we're about to grow this sector. So, by 2030, that's the goal. So yes, please, as you mentioned, Phil, please get on board with our crowdfunding campaign, and that's a chuffed. And biochar industry 2030 roadmap. So we're 40% funded and we've got 22 days to go. So, but thanks so much again, Phil and Mike, for joining Energy Link Services. Get in touch with them. Until next time, best chars.
Thank you for tuning in to the Biochar podcast. To keep up to date on all things biochar and ANZBIG, visit our website, ANZBIG.org, and sign up for our newsletter.